Succession number 27193, Reel 12.
Sergeant Major Conn, Reel 12. You're saying you were back at the depot in Lincoln. You're doing RQMS.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Yeah. What are the duties of an RQMS? What does he do?
Well, it's administration, as you know. I was responsible for all the Mary quarters, the issuing of clothing, well, intakes when we used to get the National Service come in, issue them with clothing. Anybody who's been demobbed, take them off them. Accounting for all the stores and everything. Money quarters, coal and fuel, transport, oil and fuel as well. I was responsible for all of that.
So this is really being the business manager of the battalion.
That's right, and of course, I had a quartermaster who, he was a great bloke, but he had, what do you call his stomach? Oh, God, he used to suffer terrible with, what do you call it? You know, the old... your stomach trouble, they all get through stress and that.
Oh, yes, yeah. An ulcer.
Ulcers, he had terrible ulcers.
Really? Yeah.
And anyway, at the end of the financial year, and that I used to have to close everything down and produce the what they call it for, audit for the...
the accounts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got an excellent report back, so he was chuffed. I was doing all of that. And anyway, eventually... the battalion wanted us back to the battalion, and because at that time there was a move on. They didn't know if we were going to go out to Kenya or whatever. We landed, but anyway, we went out to Malaya.
So you went back and you joined the battalion, you said,
at Minden, yeah.
Yes. And was it there that you became company sergeant major?
I was there, yeah. I was sergeant major then, yeah.
What company did you have?
I had two companies. I had headquarter company at first, and then I had support company. Okay. As a matter of fact, I've got a what they call it in there, showing where I won the drill competition in Malay with them.
And what was the battalion doing in Minden when you joined them? Were they doing anything in particular?
No, just ordinary training, that, you know, manoeuvres and things like that, like what they normally do. You know, exercises all over the country.
Was it battalion scale, or were they going above battalion level in the manoeuvres and training at that time?
How do you mean?
Well, when you went off into the field on exercise, was it battalion level, or did it go up to brigade level or divisional or higher?
Well, it had divisional exercises, which the whole brigade and everything took part in, you know what I mean? And we went all over Germany, different places, you know. We travelled all over on them, which, you know, they were divisional exercises, actually, you know, and the brigades took part in it, down to the battalions.
When you were doing those, were the tactics that were being practised different to the tactics you'd done in the Second World War, or were they the same?
Well, more or less the same. More or less the same, yeah. More or less the same. New ideas, of course, come up, you know what I mean? Things that they've learned from the war.
What sort of new ideas do you...
Well... new tactics, I suppose, you could say that.
Do you remember anything in particular about that? It struck you at the time?
No, can't remember anything, really. Can't remember.
So the equipment was roughly the same, wasn't it? Rifle, Bren gun, carrier, three-inch mortar.
Because we were getting the new ones in, like the... what would I call it? Named after Australia, what do you call it? An anti-tank weapon, you know what I mean?
Yes. And it's a recoilless rifle.
Yeah,
like,
and we had new rifles then, you know, the new rifles came in, the SLR.
Oh, right. That was that.
And because you had to train the battalion on how to use them and one thing there. And then they had the anti-tank thing, what would they call it? The Wombat.
The Wombat,
And there were the new sort of items they got in there at that time.
On these big exercises, was there in general an emphasis on attack or on defence when you were going out on manoeuvres?
Oh yes, they had, you know, you come against different other regiments that was in Germany, and you were acting as advancing troops or defensive, you know what I mean? So it did both sides of attacking and defending. That went on all over. We could have it all over Germany doing that. Mm. Yeah. Oh, God.
Were the companies you in which you were a sergeant major, were they up to strength?
Well, at that time you have a difficult because you had the national service coming in then going out, and you were never really up to strength all the time.
Well, because of turnover?
Because of the turnover, that's right, yeah. You were never fully up to strength. Just when we moved to Australia, Malaya, that we did get that, you know, brought us more or less up to strength. And we got the, that's right, yeah. And I was then sent to Liverpool, and I was ship sergeant major, troop deck sergeant major. And I was responsible for all the troops on board, together with a RSM who was the ship's troop deck, what they call it, he was inside them, and he was responsible. But I came under him, and we went out on the, what was it again? The Empire Clyde? Yeah, Empire Clyde. And we went to Singapore, calling it Aden, and Ceylon. It was Ceylon then.
On the way to Lanka.
Yeah.
What did you think of the national servicemen as soldiers? Did you think they were? What was about their level of skill, their discipline, and their other
actions
as soldiers?
They were good.
They were good.
After they'd done the training. And you saw them when they come into the depot. They were green as grass. But after they'd been in there and did the 6 weeks training, they were men, not boys any longer. And there's one thing I can say about them. When they came to the job they had to do in Malaya as fighting troops, they were good. They were every bit as good as any regular soldier. As a matter of fact, some were better.
Why were they better, do you think?
Well, I don't know. The regular soldier was in there mostly because as a career and wanted an easy time. But the youngsters that came in there, they were fighting soldiers. They became fighting soldiers. As you can say, you can get any Englishman, you just scratch your skin there and you got a soldier in there. And that was the way I looked at it then. And there was national servicemen even made sergeants. You know, they were good. Yeah, they went up to the rank of sergeants, and they were good. They were good. I had a lot of time for the national servicemen, yeah.
Were they mostly from Lincolnshire? Did they preserve a local character?
No, they came from all over. But the majority came in from, when the intake came, there's a lot of them came from Lincoln, in different, what they call it, Spalding, Boston, and Cleethorpes, and all the way around there, Lincoln itself. A lot of them from that area. Yeah, quite a lot of Lincolns amongst them. But there was others as well came in, you know, when they got made up and things like that. Reinforcements.
So he was sailing out on the Empire Clyde. What was done on the voyage out to keep people active?
Well, they were getting kitted out with the sort of jungle stuff.
Yes.
You know, and it was a question on how to wear putties and things like that. And I know I'd worn the putties before with the Essex Regiment and that, and been shown how to put them on. And I, in my company at that time, and it was headquarter company, I did mine and had them on what I call it, on parade, and getting ready for the commanding officer's inspection to come round. Now, I used to start them off and show them how to finish by putting the putties round about the width of a cigarette packet. And then when I finished, took on the tape round to make a nice little neat bow. And the RSM at that time came round and he said, "What's this?" He said, "That's the wrong way to put the putties on." And he'd shown them what he called how to do and put them on like a bloody racehorse, which is the wrong way together. And anyway, he got on to me and said, "That's the wrong way to do it." I never said anything. And anyway, the commanding officer came along and he looked at them and he said, "Sergeant Major, that is the correct way." Sergeant Major, he turned out that I was saying, "Get everybody come and see this. This is the way it should be done." And he took umbrage on that. You know, he didn't forgive me for that. He didn't forgive me. But anyway, that was it. And because he actually, the RSM, was a name, a fella called, Durry, what's his name? Bloody hell. It'll come to us.
Was he a pre-war regular?
Yes, but he served with the officers training what at Sandhurst and that, I believe, under Britain.
And Sergeant Major Britain?
Under Sergeant Major Britain, and he thought he was Sergeant Major Britain. He was only a little fellow out of Leicester's. And God.
My memory's gone. There.
Blimey. Anyway, I see him now. He had a sort of a lazy eye, a little fella. And when he came to the battalion in Egypt, and he took over from a bloke called Cressy, and Ike Cone was the RSM all the while. Cressy got made up acting, and then this fella came out. And he came out, and on his had the ordinary tunic, and he had the guardsman's RSM badge on there, on the top. And the commanding officer took one look at him, he says, "You can get that off and put the RSM badge on here," he says. Same as the, what do you call it, he said. "The guards only wear theirs on there," and he said, "not us entering his regiments." And of course he used them. Well, he's a horrible little fella.
You didn't like him?
No, nobody liked him. Nobody liked him. He was a horrible individual. And he'd never seen any action at all, you know. He'd never seen any action. As a matter of fact, when we used to do the patrols in Malaya, and he came out to one of the base camps, and he got up to the sergeant there at the base camp, and he put him on the charge, being as what you call it. And when he went back, the sergeant went in front of him and he said, "Look, sir," he said, "we're in bloody action," he said. "We don't clear up anything," he said. "We don't have this, we don't have that," he says. "We shall attract the terrorists," he said. "We've got to lay doggo for a week on end to catch these people." And he was what you call it, was scrubbed, and the commanding officer told him off again for that. He said, "Keep out of it," he said. "You don't know nothing about warfare, keep out of it." He wouldn't let him go out again. And that was it. But he used to think he'd keep it like a flaming barrack room, you know what I mean? Keep everything nice and neat and tidy and keep your dress nice and neat and tidy. Well, if you went out in the jungle, you know, you got up there, all sorts. You kept yourself clean as best as you could. But you couldn't have everything pressed and clean, could you? You know, but there we are.
Did you know anything about jungle fighting when you were going out to Malaya?
No, nope. We learnt it all while we were out there. When we first went there, we went to Cote d'Air, into Singapore.
Yes.
Nee Soon Barracks were in. And then we went to a place called Kota Tinggi, which is on the other side of the island. And that's where they had the jungle training camp then. And that's where we learnt a lot of it then from there.
Did you get any instruction on the way out about what was going on in Malaya and what you were going to be doing
there? Yeah.
Do you remember what you were told about that?
Oh, yeah. CTs, communist terrorists, and that people out there. The Malay people, you know, the majority of the communist terrorists were Chinese. Mm. They were the Chinese communists. And the point was that, what was his name? General, what do you call it at that time? He'd, all the sort of villages, he had them surrounded, you know, with a local force. And that was to keep the terrorists out. And then he used to send out patrols to you know, catch anybody that's trying to get into these compounds and get the people as well and getting food. What was his name?
Colonel Briggs.
Who?
Briggs.
No, not Briggs.
Or you're thinking about General Templar.
Templar.
Yes.
That's him.
Yeah. Well, he was the High Commissioner and Commander in Chief of.
That's it. Yes. That's Templar.
And
he was the one that introduced that scheme there. Anyway, and of course, I had the local defence tools used for that, and they were trained by the. What used to be ex-Palestine police. You know them, a lot of them. They were good lads and all. They were ex-Palestine police, they were. And they were more or less in charge of them.
What did you learn when you got to Kota Tinggi? What were the skills that you were taught?
Well, how to live on the rations you got, what you had to do, and tracking and things like that, what to look for.
What sort of rations did you get when you were
well? I had
in jungle.
What do you call it, rations? K rations, you know.
Yes.
10-man packs, 40-man packs, and what do you call it, 24-hour packs and things like that. And the thing was that. The trouble is there, you know, when they came back to camp, they had to get fresh fruit, you know, because of having them rations all together, you know, it made them constipated and all sorts, and break out in sores. So, that's it. They had to make sure they got fresh fruit when they came back, and fresh vegetables.
You mentioned tracking. What are the essential skills of tracking, and what do you look for when you're out tracking?
There was all sorts, you know what I mean, the broken twigs and things like this, you know what I mean, when they're going out there and what is in a camp and try and smell them, you can smell some of them. We had trackers, Evans.
Yeah.
You know, they were the Sarawak Rangers and that. And they were skilled in tracking and you used to always have one of them with you when you went out. They used to have tattoos all over the body. You could see them. Well, they used to use like a needle and on a what they call it. And they, you know, one was doing all the designs on them. They had them all over the body. But the teeth as well. They used to sharpen the teeth as well. You know, because they used to live off the land as well. And they were talked down to certain barks of the tree that you could get and what to live on. Even snakes. How to cook them and all of that.
How do you cook a snake?
You boil it.
You boil it.
That's what they used to do. And, there's all of them. The iguana, you just cook that the way you would anything else. You know, you could, what do you call it? Roast it.
What does snake taste like when you boil it?
Well, have you ever tried. Octopus.
Yes.
Just like that.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Mm. Something like that, yeah.
So you're learning, it sounds like you're learning really more survival skills.
Survival skills as well, yeah.
How to live in the jungle.
That's right.
Yeah. How long were you at Kota Tinggi on your training? How long did you spend at Kota Tinggi?
Oh, I didn't spend too long there. About a couple of months, I think that's all. Then we moved up. Bentong, a place called Bentong.
Bentong, where was that?
The state. What was the name of the state? Bentong. Anyway, there was an airfield there as well. Yes. And then the others were. Where did they go to? All the way around. But anyway, we went to Bentong, then to Ipoh, then Kuala Lumpur for a while, and then Ipoh, and I went up the Alice Star, and then over onto the island of. good God.
Would that be Penang?
Penang, yeah, we're in Penang for that. Yeah.
What were you actually doing when you were in Bentong? What were the operational activities that you were...
It was all jungle training.
Jungle training, not operations.
Oh, yeah.
Jungle operations.
You used to send them out patrols. They used to go out there for weeks on end. As a matter of fact, we had the Navy sent up their Marines and that to us, and we took them out on that, and they didn't like it one little bit. No, they didn't like that.
What didn't they like?
Oh, they didn't like a jungle train, didn't like a jungle at all. Didn't like sort of being out there, no doubt.
What about your lads? Did they adjust to
They adjust themselves, yeah, they did. They were very good.
When you got to Benton, what was the local situation? Was there a lot of enemy activity in the area?
No.
Was it strong?
No. No, just out in the jungle years ago, you know, there's different cells of the CT were operating in that area.
Yeah.
And your task was to try and get hold of them. You should go out there to the villages and wait there, you know, and set up ambushes and that.
Yes.
Out there, wait and see if you catch. Because you had the tappers as well, the rubber tappers, and of course they were easy prey for the terrorists, you know, to get supplies from and that as well.
Were there a lot of rubber estates in the area?
Oh yes, a lot of them. Yeah.
When you went out and set up an ambush, what sort of strength would you be at?
It was about what. You do say around about 20 blokes, yeah, around about that.
So it's cut down to two, isn't it?
Yeah, just about 20, not too many. Mm. Some of them used to be down to 10, actually, you know, as well.
Did you go out on patrol?
Oh, yeah, I went out once or twice.
Once or twice?
Yeah, but my male, what they call it, was in camp, of course. And
oh, I see.
Doing the, what they call it, doing the admin, and having everybody ready, you know, to go out on patrols.
Mm.
Yeah. Of course, you see, you had the commanding officer, commander used to go out as well.
Yes.
And then when he'd gone, I was in charge of the camp.
So you were minding the shop while
that
he was out.
That was it, yeah. I was the camp. Yeah.
What sort of... Because presumably there wasn't much scope for using anti-tank weapons or other support weapons in...
Not really, not for anti-tank, no. No. The only thing that used to go out there was lightly armed, small arms, you know.
Yes.
Sten guns, Bren guns, and rifles.
So everyone is infantry, really.
That's right, infantry weapons.
Everyone's a rifleman, effectively. And when you went out on your patrol, how long were you out?
A week.
A week.
A week.
And what sort of distance could you cover in the jungle in a week?
Well, the jungle is very heavy, you know, to travel out, but you should go out in about, 6 or 7 miles.
Oh.
You know, how you used to go. But it was hard going, because you weren't in one place for long, and then you used to move the camp.
Yes.
And then you'd possibly be in there for about 3 days, hanging around, waiting around.
Well, it was like a patrol base.
Yes, sir, but it all depends on the information you got, what was in the area.
Yeah. Well, where did you get your information from?
Because you get the information from ex-terrorists who came under the, police.
Mm.
You know,
the
Malay police.
Yes.
Which are ex-Palestine police.
All right.
You know, and a lot of them were ex-Palestinian police. And you had a lot of communists who'd come you used to get a lot of information from them and what would happen and who was where and what have you.
Did the police go out on patrol with the army?
Oh, yes. They used to go out on patrols on their own as well.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they used to do their own patrols. But invariably, you see, if you wanted them, you used to get them to go out with them. Not very often, but because old people used to do it on their own, you know. And we had some good lads on that, and officers who were pretty good at it as well. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's often said that this was really a corporal's war. It was a war going on at section level in Malaya.
Platoon level, actually. You know, and sections, of course, you had corporals in charge then, you know. But, you see, if you went out, there might be about a platoon of them went out, is what they call it, but they went in different directions, split up.
Yeah.
And sort of ambushed different areas. So approaches to the camp, which were known as approaches, you know. And you just lie and wait, and wait them. And sometimes you might be able to get out and you'll find a terrorist camp. Then they used to attack them as well, which has happened many times.
Did you have contacts when you were on patrol? Not
me.
You are personally.
Not personally.
You didn't have a contact with...
No. Never had that luck. Mm. Didn't have that luck at all. I went out there a couple of times, you know, but normally it wasn't, you know, I wasn't supposed to go out, actually, you know.
Yeah, well, one could imagine that if you were a sergeant major, you were really coordinating things
That's right, you're controlling everything. Yeah,
but then you couldn't coordinate effectively unless you knew what they were doing.
That's right. You see, if I didn't know, well, that's right, because the commanding officer, or company commander, he used to go out quite often. And I was left then to look after the camp, and with the rest of them that was left behind. So,
Roughly what sort of proportion of the company would be out on patrol at any particular day? What sort of effort could you generate?
Oh, just about a platoon, that's all.
So you'd have one platoon out, two platoons in the camp.
That's right, and of course they alternate in there.
They alternate,
yeah.
What would the platoons who were in the camp be doing while the others were out patrolling?
All admin stuff, cleaning the weapons and what have you. Yeah, that's all. They used to do administrative stuff, making sure that the weapons and everything was kept clean and what have you. And even your own camp, you had to have a guard on as well, you know.
Oh, yes. I was going to ask if the camp had to be defended.
Yeah. So you had your own camp as well to defend. But I was in a place in Ypres where we had the Australians with us in a camp. And... a lot of them were undisciplined.
Oh, were they? What ways?
Well, they didn't take to discipline very much like a British soldier, anyway. You know, and we also had an officer in there who was ex-British Army, and he used to say to me, he said, "Sergeant Major, I would like you in my army," he said. And he even tried to bribe me to try and join the Australian Army. Mm. He did, yeah. But that was it. And we took some of the Australians out with us on trips like that to even teach them what to do.
Yes.
But they lost more of their own men than they ever killed.
Did they?
Yeah.
How did they manage that?
They did. They lost a lot of men. Mm. You know, not knowing what to do.
You were mentioning you were in different areas. You were in Bentong, Ypres, Kuala Lumpur, and so on. Were there any in Penang?
Penang, yeah.
Penang
was an easy station. There was nothing there.
Right.
That was just a sort of...
What about the other places? Did they vary a lot?
Oh, yeah. There was other places there. I can't remember the names, actually. You know, where they were as well. I'd have to go through the old history book of Lincoln's, I think, to find out, to remember them all, anyway. Mm. There was other stations there, and I can't think of them. They were right in the jungle itself, you know, right there. And,
How did you get on with the local population, the Malays and the...
Malay people are marvellous, they're lovely people, they're very... Yeah, inoffensive there was, you know what I mean? They were a lazy nation, like discomfort. But but they were easy to get on with, very easy. And as I said, the only what you call you had the difficulty with the Chinese sort of population, you know.
Yeah.
That was them.
What sort of facilities were there for R&R in Malaya?
They had what they call, when they used to go out for a rest period, there was a place called, I went there, Leaf Station, right up in the mountains. Mm-hmm. I took a family up there as well, because it was out there where my son, who went out to Malay with a wife when he was only 6 months old, less than that. Mm-hmm. And he caught diphtheria and double pneumonia and left him blind and paralysed for the rest of his life.
That's bad luck.
Yeah. And he was in the Kuala Lumpur hospital. And some of it happened, I don't know. Mm. But we nursed him, and he lived till he was 17 years of age. Mm. And he died when I was with Esso, then I'd finished the army. And when I moved to the General Infantry, he was up in in what do you call it, Prudhoe, a place called Prudhoe, near Newcastle. And it's a shame, really.